to 1 Kings chapter 19. Now let me set the stage for you as we begin. In 1 Kings 18, you have a story about a man named Elijah. Elijah has basically, as the old cliche would say, has had it up to here with Ahab and the prophets of Baal. And so Elijah says, a contest. Let's settle this once and for all. You get your prophets of Baal, and I alone will face them. And so in 1 Kings 18, we're told of this contest as they went up to the top of a mountain, and the prophets of Baal, some 450 of them, built this ornate altar on top of this mountain, and they spent all of this time making it look a certain way and appear a certain way. Elijah built his very simple, according to what God had told him. And Elijah has one of the best moves you can possibly make in a competition. He says, "You guys go first." Now, Elijah knew what was going to happen, and so it even takes on more meaning in the fact that Elijah knew exactly what was going to happen. And Elijah sort of just stands back and watches as these 450 prophets put their sacrifice upon the altar, and they begin to pray and to cry out and to scream for their God to set fire to that sacrifice, and nothing happened. And after hours of screaming and yelling and praying, Elijah can't help himself. He has a little bit of fun at their expense. So Elijah says, maybe he can't hear you. Maybe you should yell louder. Maybe he's gone on vacation. Maybe he forgot to tell you that he was gone. Maybe he's gone to the restroom. You keep screaming, though, because that really seems to be working. Elijah can't help it. There's a sarcastic bone in his body, much like most of ours. And he just can't help it. Finally, the prophets of Baal have done so much, they've gone to such extremes, they begin to cut their bodies. And Elijah says, enough, enough, enough with this foolishness. And Elijah looks at his altar, and he puts the offering on it. And then, in a very strange turn of events, he says, "I want you to pour water on my altar and on my sacrifice." And you have to believe that those that were helping that day looked at him with a very strange sort of look, as you don't put water on an altar to set fire to it. That's not how this works. He says, "No, as a matter of fact, I want you to dig a trench around my altar, and I want you to pour so much water on the sacrifice that it fills up this trench." Now, this is not a trench of, you know, a couple of inches. We're talking about basically a ditch. They dig all the way around this altar, and they begin to pour more and more and more water on this, and people have to be at this point thinking, this guy is crazy. Finally, the ditch is full almost to the top, and Elijah says, "Okay, that's enough." Elijah begins to pray. And his prayer is a very simple prayer. "God, do something today that will grab the attention of these prophets of Baal. And Father, not just these prophets of Baal, but all that are watching. Show them today that you are God." The Bible says that fire came down from heaven and it burned up the sacrifice. You see, if it would have just burned up the sacrifice, that would be one thing. They probably could have conjured up some sort of magic trick and said, that's just a magic trick that he pulled off. But to leave no doubt, God not only burns up the sacrifice, he burns up the altar. Now, here's something strange. The altar was made up of rocks. I don't know about you, but I've never seen a rock burn up. Had he just done that, maybe perhaps they could have said, okay, well, it was just happenstance. A lightning strike maybe hit and it destroyed it. It didn't. But not only did he do that, then it says the fire went around the ditch and lapped up all of the water that was in the ditch. You see, they couldn't explain that away. And so they ran. And Elijah tells the men of Israel, pursue them. End this once and for all. And as they are doing that, Elijah turns and he looks at the king and he says, get off of this mountain. It's about to rain. Now, if you don't know the whole context, that sounds kind of strange. If you do know the context, you know exactly what he's talking about. It's been 3.5 years since it's rained a drop. 3.5 years since it's rained a drop. And Elijah says, get off of this mountain. It's about to rain. Ahab says, you're crazy. It hasn't rained in 3.5 years. It's not going to rain now. He says, it's going to rain. You better get off of this mountain before it comes. They go back and forth. And finally, Ahab says, go up and look. Go up to the top part of the mountain and look and see if you see rain. And the man comes back and says, there's a cloud about the size of a man's hand off in the distance. And Ahab says, see, Elijah, it's not going to rain. It's been 3.5 years. It's not going to rain. Elijah says, I'm going to tell you one final time. Get off of this mountain. It's about to rain. And the Bible tells you that before Ahab could even get to the bottom of the mountain, the rain began. Now, as you finish reading 1 Kings chapter 18, that is a life-changing, life-altering experience. In two separate occasions, Elijah literally has a direct connection to God and has something miraculous happen because of his connection to God. You would think, and I would think, and honestly everyone that reads this story would think, that if that happened to me, I would be on cloud nine. My spirituality would be at an all-time high. My connection to God would remain strong. But then we get to 1 Kings chapter 19. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed off all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so may the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow. It's a threat you probably would expect. If you know anything about Ahab and Jezebel, you know that they weren't exactly the poster couple for marital happiness. There's a reason why little girls are not named Jezebel. That lady was as evil as it gets. Ahab had already shown previously in his life that he didn't have the guts to stand up to her, or the backbone to stand up to her. If you go back and read, you read about Naboth's vineyard, you know that her solution was to simply murder Naboth and take it for your own, Ahab. If you want it, go get it. And Ahab didn't say anything other than, okay. So you can almost get the picture that Ahab, after this horrible thing has happened, and he's been embarrassed in the eyes of the Israelites by Elijah, he runs right back home to Jezebel and says, that mean man embarrassed me. He killed all of our prophets. He even looked me in my eye and told me what to do. I'm the king. Nobody tells me what to do. And Jezebel says, you send a message to Elijah. He's a dead man by this time tomorrow. It's a threat you should expect. But if you're Elijah and you just had this mountaintop moment with God, don't you think you would have the courage? Don't you think you would have the backbone to respond to this threat? You would think. But instead, here's what Elijah did. Then he was afraid. And he arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. Okay, maybe you're a little fearful. Maybe you're a little scared. And so maybe you do take precaution. But If you keep reading, it becomes even sadder. He himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, "It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my father's." You see, she didn't show up to his house with a bunch of soldiers. She simply opened her mouth and said something. This morning, let me try to encourage you. Let me try to encourage you. Because you know what? Honestly, in all of our lives, we encounter things and situations, perhaps we need a little encouragement to get through. Let's take this story from Elijah and let's see if we can pull it apart and see if maybe we could help you today. First of all, let's understand this. Someone's words only have the power that you give them. First and foremost, someone's words only have the power that you give them. That's a whole lot easier for me to put on a slide, right? I walk through my life every single day and I deal with teenagers. I don't know why I chose that profession sometimes. Because I have to deal with 10th and 11th grade boys and girls every single day. I start my day 3 days a week with 44 freshman boys in a Bible class. Now, I don't know if you remember what it was like to be a freshman in high school. They're not really interested in deep theological discussions. My day continues and I have 10th and 11th graders most of the rest of the day. I have some seniors throughout the day. And then I go and I coach baseball now that basketball's over. I coach middle school baseball, which means I leave my wonderful high schoolers who are so incredibly mature and go coach 7th and 8th grade boys. You know what? I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't trade it for anything. All kidding aside, I love what I do. But I guarantee you that at least once during that day, I am approached by one of my students that I have. And they will say something to the effect of, "Did you hear what that person said? Coach, have you heard about what they said about..." Inevitably, it happens at least once a day. And now I start telling them this. Someone's words only have the power that you give them. If somebody wants to call you a bunch of names, if someone wants to call you a loser, those words mean absolutely nothing unless you acknowledge them. If somebody wants to come to me and tell me that I'm bad at what I do, that's okay. That's their words. They have no power if I don't give them any. Oh, if Elijah would have simply known this simple fact, or if he would have applied it, I'm sure he knew it. Jezebel had nothing but words. If you know your history, if you've read ahead, you know, if you read 1 Kings 19, was Elijah dead the next day? No. They were simply words. But because Elijah injected them with all sorts of power, he winds up hiding underneath a tree. Elijah had just borne witness to God annihilating the prophets of Baal at his command, no less. And yet the words of one woman sent him running for cover. Number one this morning, know this. Someone's words only have the power that you give them. If you give them no power, then they have no power. They're just words. Secondly, why would you take what someone says over what God has already done? Think about this in the context of our example. Literally, 24 hours earlier, Elijah had stood on the mountain and watched as God struck the sacrifice, the altar, etc., on and on and on. Literally, because of his prayer, God made it rain for the first time in 3.5 years. And yet, the very next morning, the words of a woman sent him running for cover. Why in the world would you take what someone says over what God has done? And yet, many of us do it every single day of our lives. If you can be honest for a moment, look into the mirror and look back at yourself and think about this. How many times have you allowed something that's happened in your life to make you blame God for your current circumstance? Think about how many people out there in this world claim to be Christians, but yet the first time something doesn't go the way they wanted it to, they look at God and say, "Why me?" Think about how many people sitting in this room now have gone through life-altering, life-changing moments, both positive and negative, and have blamed God when the negative happens and won't acknowledge Him when the positive happens. If we can be honest with ourselves, then certainly we're all guilty. But you know what the beautiful thing about that is that in that honesty, if you are a Christian, is an acknowledgement that you alone, by yourself, can't do it. You see, in acknowledgement of my failure, I acknowledge that by myself, I can't do it. And in that honesty, in that purity of statement, I now know that I need God. Which leads me to His Word, which leads me to example after example after example of God doing for His people. Unbelievable things. In the book of Ephesians, Paul writes, "Now to Him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine." That is the God that you serve this morning. That is the reason why you're here. At least it better be. If that's not the reason why you're here, I got news for you. Your worship is in vain. That's the God that you serve. The God who is able to do immeasurably more than you can ever ask and more than you can ever imagine. So please explain to me, why is it that we take the words and the actions of human beings over what God has already done and what He says He will do? Number three, emotions are information, not instruction. Emotions are information, not instruction. Elijah is struck with fear. 1 Kings chapter 19 tells you so. He's struck with fear. Then he was afraid, the Bible says. And rather than taking that emotion as information, he took it as information that would lead to instruction. Again, I deal with teenagers. If you've been around teenagers for longer than, I don't know, 12 seconds, you probably know that a lot of times teenagers are dictated by their emotions. If something good happens, it's the best day they've ever had. If something bad happens, it's the worst day they've ever had. There is no in between. It's either the best day ever or the worst day ever. He says, because they're guided by their emotions. The front part of your brain is the last part to develop. If you've studied psychology, you probably had to take a test over that. But this cortex of your brain up here in the front is the last part to develop. Now, scientists are always baffled by things, right? They're always trying to answer questions. Well, that's one of the questions, is why is that one the last one to form? And then the second part of that question is, how does that impact mankind? Well, first of all, we don't really have a great answer. I have a great answer, because God made you that way. That's why it's the last part to develop. But the second part is much more interesting. How does that affect you? Well, the front part of your brain is where all of the information is stored that tells you about consequences of your actions. How many of us, don't raise your hand because the entire room would raise their hand, how many of us made mistakes when you were a teenager that you wish you could go back and change now? Again, don't everybody raise your hand. How many of us talk about things that we did when we were teenagers as though they were horrific mistakes? Oh, back when I was a teenager. I can't tell you how many times I've had people come into my class to talk to my kids, and they'll say, back when I was your age, oh my goodness. Oh, I could tell you about some things, but I won't. Why is that? We like to gloss over and we say it's a lack of maturity, which is true. You see, teenagers struggle because they don't understand the consequences of what they're saying or doing. Many times, once you explain to them the consequences of what they're doing, they have a completely different outlook on what they did. You see, as grown-ups, as adults, we don't have that excuse about our brain. So sometimes we have to look in the mirror and be honest and say, well, you know what? Honestly, I made a mistake. My emotion got the best of me. Elijah is struck with the emotion of fear. And rather than remembering what God had already done for him, rather than ignoring her words and not giving them any power, he used his emotion as an instruction to act, and he ran, scared. Remember, emotions are simply information. They're not instruction to act. And then finally, there's a phrase that Elijah says in 1 Kings 19:4. If you look at it, it says Elijah looked to God and said, it is enough. It is enough. Right before that, the Bible tells you that he prayed that he might die. He actually wanted God to take his physical life. For it is enough. Enough. Enough implies that I've reached my limit. I've reached my fill. Elijah says, God, I can't go anymore. It's enough. Now, keep your ribbon there in 1 Kings 19 and go to John chapter 19. John chapter 19 and verse 30. And I want you to look at the phrase that Jesus uses in John chapter 19 and verse 30. Jesus could have very easily and been well within his right to say, it's enough. It's enough. We even sing the song sometimes. He could have called 10,000 angels. Don't you think there were moments in that garden where Jesus wanted to say, it's enough? But aren't you glad that he didn't? Because when Jesus looked at his situation, he did not stop until he could say, it is finished. Elijah looked at his situation and begged God to end it, because it's enough. God, I can't do this anymore. And unfortunately, many of us have been in those exact same shoes before. We've looked at God and said, God, you've put on me more than I can handle. It's enough. I'm done. I can't do this. Rather than, God, I'll do whatever it takes so that I can say it's finished. This morning, it's really very simple. It's really very simple because many of us have been in these situations before, and so nothing I've told you is brand new today. But at the very outset, I told you I wanted to encourage you. You find that encouragement a little bit further down in 1 Kings chapter 19. As you get down to beginning of verse 9, Elijah gets to a cave and he stayed in it. And here's what I can't get over. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him. God came to him. And all of his running away from his problems, from his situation, from his issues, God came to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? Listen to Elijah's excuses. I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. The people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, killed your prophets with a sword, and I only am left. And they seek my life to take it away. God said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, the Lord wasn't in the earthquake. After the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? And Elijah offers his excuses again. Then, if you remember, God closes with an indictment, if you will. Elijah, here's what you're going to do. You're going to come down out of this mountain. You're going to go and you're going to anoint the next king. You're going to go and you're going to anoint Jehu as basically the sergeant at arms, if you will. Then you're going to go and anoint Elisha to take your place as the prophet of God. And Elijah, here's what you need to know. There are 7,000 who have not bowed a knee to Baal. You are not alone. There is no reason for you to be scared, Elijah. This morning, it may be that you are afraid. You are afraid. Things have happened in your life that have made you afraid. You find yourself concerned, worried, nervous, anxious. Let me encourage you this morning. Don't be like Elijah. Don't run and hide. Don't give power to the words that someone says to you. Don't take their words or their actions over what God has already done and says He will continue to do in your life. Don't let your emotions become instructions to act. Rather, take them as information. And above all else, let us never be a people that looks at God and says, it's enough. Let us seek out ways to serve him so that at the end of time we can say with full confidence, it is finished. This morning, if you're not a Christian, then honestly, a lot of the things we talked about don't apply to you. That's not rude. That's not meant to be mean-spirited. That's just simply the case is that relationship with God is just simply not there yet. But you know what's amazing about that is that just like he did with Elijah, God is ready, willing, and able to come to you. Through his word, he has come to you. You have to decide whether or not you believe it. If you do, are you willing to repent? Are you willing to turn away from the things that are keeping you from having that right relationship with God? Are you willing to confess that his son is exactly who he said he was? And are you willing to be buried in baptism and arise to walk in newness of life? It's very possible there are many in here who have been Christians perhaps for many, many years. And when you look into the mirror, you realize that you've let a lot of other things get in the way. You've let the words and the actions of someone else take away the things that you hold most dear, your relationship with God. You've realized that in living your life, you have hidden away from the things that you needed to make right. So it may be that you need to come forward confessing public sin. It's very possible that you just need to make your relationship with God right where you stand. If we can assist you in some way, come now as we stand and as we sing.